Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Just a little heads up. This episode of White Wine Question Time features some rather strong and fruity language. So if you're listening around children, you might want to pop your headphones on. Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks its guests three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine. And my guests this week, well, they're exactly the same as they were last week. So good, we couldn't contain them in just one episode and have decided to run it as a two-parter. They are the king and queen of chat, especially when it comes to ruling daytime television. No surnames necessary. This is part two of a fascinating conversation with Richard and Judy. So, are you ready, Richard and Judy, for your third and final question? I wanted to talk about resets because, Judy, you made the decision to stop working on screen years ago and have reset your own professional life as a writer. Richard, you weren't ready to do that. So for the first time, actually, one went left and one went right in your professional lives. How have you managed to stay together, stay tight? Because you seem as tight as ever while stepping away from each other, recarving your own identities.
Don't know. I've never thought about it like that. We are incredibly close, always have been. And yes, we work together. So obviously that, and there were many years that we worked together. For how many years? 30 years?
21. Well, no, if you include Granada Report, 21 on This Morning and Richard and Judy on Channel 4, and about 6 years on regionals for that, so that's 27 years.
And we still do the book club together.
Oh, yeah, well, you write a column together.
But in terms of television, it doesn't... obviously, I think working together for so long has bonded us more tightly than maybe if we had two completely separate jobs. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think the thing is, when you're presenting a show like of the kind that we presented, it's very instinctive. You know, you're doing sort of interviews all the time. You're doing interviews with complete strangers. You're doing serious interviews. You're also doing interviews with ordinary people who've been through extraordinary experiences. And you're also interviewing celebrities, obviously. And it kind of does give you I think it did form a kind of extra telepathic muscle between us. It must have done. I mean, I think we quite often knew what we were doing. But it was so fully, by the time I decided I'd had enough, I think that you and I were something completely different anyway. It just didn't, it just didn't matter, did it? I mean, no. It didn't make any difference at all that we were no longer spending, that, you know, when you go and do GMB, I'm still here in bed. I'm happy to say when he gets up, back up dawn.
Bye!
And in bed, yeah. But it doesn't make any difference at all to our relationship.
Remarkable, though? Isn't that remarkable after all of those years where you were hand in glove professionally?
But I can see that from the outside, it looks as if, as you say, we were bonded, you know, in our professional lives together, and now we're not. But actually, here in the inside, we sort of still are. I'll explain why. I mean, firstly, since 2001, we write a weekly double-page column for a national newspaper, and we need to talk to each other about what the other. But we need to divide up the things we're going to write about because it's very topical. You know, I want to write about this week. No, you wrote about it last week. Oh, okay, so we're constantly in conversation about that, and we show each other what we've written. So we're still working together to produce a double page with our pictures on it. We run the, as you said earlier, we run the book club, which is very, you know, busy, and we do our own podcast where the two of us interview the authors, the six authors that we've picked, every 3 months. So we're still doing interviews together like that. But in terms of what I do on my own, which at the moment is Good Morning Britain, although who knows how long that'll go on for. I kind of do it month to month at the moment, and I'm very happy to. You know, it's I quite like operating at that level. I've had my main career curve. You know, I'm not seeking some another huge kind of career arc. We'll see what happens, but I enjoy it. I enjoy doing it. But when I come home from doing a Good Morning Britain, because Judy spent, you know, decades in that area of television and journalism, she knows straight away when she asks, you know, how did it go, and I start telling her, she knows what I'm talking about because she's done it. So I'll talk about maybe a cabinet minister who wouldn't give a straight answer and we had to get quite heavy with him, or I'll talk about a cock-up that I've made. I've said something that I shouldn't have done. I'm going to have to bloody deal with it, you know, tomorrow. And she gets it. You know, she's been there. She's been there with me. We have a shorthand. I don't have to explain it to her. You know, it's not like she's a bank manager retired. You know, she's a television presenter retired. And so it's that kind of instant understanding and comprehension is totally there. So we're not actually as detached. I suppose we're a bit semi-detached, but we're not detached in the way that it might seem to outsiders like you.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's just because you are Richard and Judy, you are Ant and Dec. Do you know what I mean? And is not a separate word, it's just all one word, Richard and Judy. Yes. And that's how the audience, the public, have grown up with you. You are inextricably linked in the eyes of the public. And yet you have both. I mean, I love the way that people report that Judy's retired. Actually, I think you'll find that Judy is as busy as ever. I really get quite annoyed about this when I read it, Judy, because you're running Britain's Biggest Book Club. You write a weekly column. You host a podcast. And by the way, you're way past the age of retirement. So you should have your feet up, but you don't. You're really busy. You're writing novels.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the thing about being on telly. If you stop being on telly, everybody thinks you disappear. But actually, there is life outside a television studio. There's quite a lot of interesting things to do outside television, as I'm finding out. And I must admit, I quite enjoy Richard still doing a topical programme because I can kind of, as you say, I mean, I relate to it instantly. If you come home complaining about a particular interviewee or a particular celebrity or something, I quite enjoy that. It makes me feel kind of part of it and everything as well.
Yeah.
But that happens to get up really early, have your hair and makeup done and go through all of the other stuff that goes along. Yeah, I know.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Being...
You can keep that. You can picnic on it, Judy. You can just take a few bites of your sandwich and then put it back down again.
Absolutely. That's a good analogy. Yeah.
Being a woman on television is just such harder work, you know, because of the imagery involved, basically. I mean, I get up at 4:15. Now, that is pushing it. I am pushing it. But, you know, hopefully at this stage in my career, I sort of know what I'm doing, so I don't really need to get there much earlier. But I get up at 4:15 and I'm having a meeting with Susanna and the producer at 5 o'clock. In her dressing room, and then we're on air at 6. And I quite like that kick, bollock, rush and scramble. But the women who are presenting the programme, whether it's Susanna or Ranveer or Charlotte, whatever, you know, they have to get up at 3:15 because there is just the simple fact of hair and makeup. You know, it can't be denied. It's just part and parcel of it. And men don't have to put up with that. You know, you can sort of, you know, you can get in and in the meeting, you can be shaving with your electric razor. You can be, you know, sort of I washed my hair the night before. Mm. You know, it's much easier if you're a bloke, and you just step into a suit. So there's a lot more involved in personal prep. Well, as you know, in personal preparation, and on breakfast television, that means getting up really in the middle of the night. Mm. I get up sort of getting closer to dawn. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, it is the middle of the night. I think some people find it utterly baffling, Judy, that you've chosen to walk away from a career on camera. I really get it, and I have a lot of friends that work in our business, and I quite often say when they start to sort of realise levels of anxiety around not working, please go and read any interview with Judy Finnegan, and you'll find it hugely reassuring that there is a life beyond this bubble. And you're quite right, people not only assume that you've sort of, you know, you're doing nothing if you're not on telly, it's almost like a professional death. And that can often feel very much the case for the person itself. I don't speak for myself here because I'm very much of your school. I go off, I've done lots of other things as well as working on screen. And I like that portfolio. I think it's healthy. I also feel very uncomfortable at this age being scrutinised through a menopausal lens. it's a very hard time to be so public facing.
Yeah. I know, and I think, I mean, social media was, when we were doing it, it was around, but it wasn't as bad as it is at the moment, and and I think it's absolutely horrendous. I think the way that and I also think that the way you were talking earlier about the way that the papers pick up on women on television, we talk about social media, but actually I think a lot of the press are just as bad, because they pick up, if they want to sort of say somebody's awful or made a dreadful remark or something, they may say, oh, isn't social media awful, the press may, but they pick it up and they live on it, they love it just the same.
It's a great shame the way that social media has toxified in the way that it has. I mean, when in our final years on Richard and Judy at Channel 4, Twitter was just kicking in, and I went on Twitter and stuff, and I used to quite enjoy it. We'd come off air, and I'm not saying I did this all the time, but, you know, maybe two or three times a week, I'd go on Twitter 8 o'clock in the evening just to see what people were saying about the show that night. We'd gone off air a couple of hours earlier, and it was always interesting. Sometimes it was critical, but it was critical in an intelligent and sometimes completely accurate way. Or it would be complimentary, but it was always a good discussion, and I would join the discussion, and we'd kick it around, and people liked the fact that they could talk to the presenter of the show that they were talking about. And it was civil. Yeah. And it was polite. You've got the occasional stupid remark, but by and large, my analogy was this. I thought Twitter, when it started, the first 2 or 3 years, it was a bit like a new pub opening around the corner, and you could go into that pub, and it's full of strangers, but they were, on the whole, really nice, interesting people, and you could have a really nice, interesting conversation and then leave after an hour or two. And now, it's this horrible, horrible pub that the moment you walk in, people are throwing drinks at you, you know, and
sausage rolls.
And throwing food at you and swearing at you and letting your car tires down in the car park outside. So you don't go to the pub anymore. So I don't go on Twitter anymore. It's pointless because, you know.
Yeah, and it is a shame. It gives a voice to the voiceless, but while that's great, it also gives a huge volume button to arseholes.
Yeah.
Well, Graham Norton put it very well in an interview a couple of months ago. I read it. Very fun. Called Bing Graham. It's very funny. He too has basically retired from Twitter. He just can't be bothered with it. And the interviewer asked him why, and he said, "Well," he said, "I'll give you an example." He said, "I've still got my account." He said, "I could open it now on my phone." He said, "I could send a message now saying, 'Morning, everybody. Graham here. Sorry, I've not been with you for a while. I've been busy, but isn't it a beautiful morning?'" He said, "I'll count down from 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go to the inbox, and there'll be a message saying, 'Easy for you to say it's a beautiful morning, you rich bastard.'" you just cannot win. You just cannot win.
Maybe
you
can't win.
Maybe there should be a compulsory Twitter charm school. I mean, maybe, you know, like the old Lucy Clayton schools of etiquette.
I love it.
There ought to be, before you go on Twitter, you have to pass a test in politeness and niceness.
Well, but of course, it can happen face to face. Very rarely, most people in the real world are polite, you know, and they observe the niceties, or they're just nice people. But occasionally, you meet somebody who is basically Twitter personified. It happened to me. Judy's heard the story so many times. So don't roll your eyes. It was a few years ago. And we were down in Cornwall, and it was a gorgeous, gorgeous June morning. It's about 9 a.m. So I'm. No one else is on the footpath, and I'm at the highest point, about 300-400 feet up, And round the bend in front of me, about 50 yards in front of me, coming towards me, was this enormous bloke. And as you, as you'll know, Kate, in this business, you learn, you can't fail to learn when you, when somebody sees you, if they recognise you or not. You can see the impression, they recognise. So, and you can also tell if they like you or not. And I could tell straight away that A, this bloke had clocked me and knew I was that bloke off the telly, and B, loathed me. I could tell it. It was all over his face. He loathed me. And as we drew closer and closer, I thought, well, he's going to say something. I can see he's building up to say something. Oh, my God, this is going to be fun. And it was quite a narrow path, steep drop on down to the sea on one side. And we had to sort of shuffle past each other. And me, playing Mr. Innocent, Mr. Nice Guy, I said to him, aren't we lucky? What a morning. What a morning to be out like this. And he was so consumed with a passionate hatred of me that he couldn't form words. And he just sort of went... and walked on. I thought, okay. So I go to the village and I do my shopping, and I'm coming back about half an hour later, and I'm at exactly the same point on the path, coming in the opposite direction, and blow me down, same bloke appears coming around from the other side. And now I can see, yes, of course he recognises me, yes, of course he still hates me, but now I can see the third thing. He'd thought of what he should have said and what he probably was going to lie to his wife and say that he'd said to that bloke off the telly, but now he's got a chance to say it. So he looked a combination of delighted and angry. So we get closer together, we stop, and I, playing the innocent again, said, we meet again and still the sun shines, or something crappy like that. And he put his finger very close to my chest, and he said, and he was from Birmingham, apologies for the accent, it's not very good, but he said, I just want you to know that everything you've ever done, everything you've ever said, everything you ever say or do, I loathe and despise. And he walked on, and genuinely creased up laughing. I just literally doubled up laughing. And I can still see his face. He turned round. I think he thought he'd sort of destroyed me. And I managed to sort of get through my laugh. I said, no, thank you. I said, you've just given me a great story. Thank you so much. I've never seen him since. So you can meet a real-life Twitter on legs, but it's very rare. It's very rare.
Yeah, when eggs come to life.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As you sit here today... Well, what does a happy life look like for you guys right now, both of you?
It's kids, isn't it? And grandkids.
Well, it's having a close family, as I said earlier, and having grandkids. We're very lucky that way. I do like that freedom. I mean, that is, I sense, what I appreciate most out of not doing daily television. Because really, I mean, when I first started working in television, it was daily. It was daily news on this morning was daily. The Richard Judy show was daily. It can take over your entire life and your thought processes and your imagination and everything. You just don't seem to exist beyond it. And I love the freedom of not doing that now. I love the freedom of being able to do...
I'd agree with that. I mean, because I only do Good Morning Britain in the same way that Piers used to do it, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then that's it. But I would say, and I know you'd say this too, that for me, what happiness looks like, and it was in this room that we're talking to you from, this is our dining room. We've got kind of an extendable dining table, and it can, at a pinch, it can seat about 13 or 14 people. And 3 or 4 weeks ago, because we got stuck in America at Christmas because we both got COVID and we couldn't fly home. So we didn't see any of the family over Christmas, and therefore they didn't really see each other. So just at the end of February, we had a very belated Christmas dinner here in the house, here in this room. And everybody came down. Tom and Davina, one of the twins and his wife, and their daughters came down from Manchester and stayed here. And Jack and Izzy, his wife, and Kit, their little boy, and Chloe and James.
Dan and Joe,
one of the other twins and his wife. They all came here. So the house was full of children and full of our children. And we were all crammed around this table. And I just remember coming, and I cooked a huge turkey, which I got from the local Hampstead Butchers. And it was, I remember coming into the room just after I'd kind of plated up and everybody was eating. And we're so lucky not only to have, I think, a fabulous family, but they all really get on. And as an agony uncle, I get a lot of letters from people with you know, fractures in the family and how can we heal it? And we've had this problem. And we're so lucky, we don't have that in our family. Our kids love each other. You know, we've got a family WhatsApp group, which everybody talks to each other on every day, including us. And that's a blessing. You know, that doesn't come automatically. It's a blessing. And I just thought, coming in the room, and you talk about happiness, that's my well of happiness. I just looked at them all, you know, from us oldest, you know, I won't say how old you are, me, I'll be 66 in May, and we're going all the way down to the youngest kids, who are three, and we're all in here together, kind of loving each other.
And I thought, having a lot of fun.
And having a lot of laughs, yeah.
Having a lot of laughs. I mean, the way that, you know, they we do have a good time.
Oh, yeah. It's lovely. Yeah, it was great. Yeah. So, yeah, that's my great pleasure now. No doubt about it.
That is wealth, isn't it? That is your wealth right there.
Yes.
At your table.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's priceless.
Yeah.
It's priceless.
Yeah.
It really is. I cannot thank the pair of you enough, not just for your time today, but for kind of everything, because when I walked into telly, you were two of the first hands I latched onto. You were unfailingly kind, always generous with your time, your encouragement. You're a class act, the pair of you, and you taught me so much. And to hear you so happy, and to see your children, those little ones that used to run around that studio tearing the place up, thriving and doing so well, it's just a lovely thing. So thank you both, and continued success with everything you do, and more importantly, everything you choose not to do.
Yeah. Ah, there's the rock. Kate, yeah, well put, Kate.
Kate, you're making me cry. I can feel my eyes burning. That's so sweet of you. Thank you very much. That's really nice. Thank you.
Very kind of you.
It's very true. And you know what? I don't know what playground young up and coming presenters get to go and play in anymore. Maybe it's still the This Morning studio, and maybe Holly and Phil are paying that kind of kindness forward. I'm not there, but I know that meant so much to me. And for the purposes of researching this show, I sat and watched the other night, and I thought, I'll just have a little 5 minutes with it. And I did the full show. I watched your last This Morning, because I was there with you on the day. Do you remember when George Michael phoned in and savaged Paul O'Grady, which was really fun to watch.
With
George telling Denise Robertson that he was her biggest fan.
Well, I'll tell you a quick story about George Michael, who was in this room that we're sitting in now, our dining room. It was about 3 years before we left This Morning and went to Channel 4. And it was about 2 weeks before Christmas. And Judy and I were launching, it was a Monday, we were launching that year's This Morning Christmas appeal. It was some children's charity booth. And so we had something that you would have done, a VT of some kind, you know.
And the
numbers to ring and the lines to call and, you know, a studio interview, big launch. Okay, that's the Christmas charity. And we came off air at 12:30 and our then editor was waiting for us in the corridor just outside the studio, hopping from one foot to the other with excitement. And she said, guess how much we've raised already for the charity? And we said, how much? She said, almost £100,000, which was unprecedented. And we said, what? How? That's, she said, because we had one donation of £50,000 from one person. And we said, who from? She said, I can't tell you. I'm sworn to secrecy. So we basically grabbed her by the earlobes and said, who from? Tell us. And she said, well, it's George Michael. Said, George Michael watches the show. None of us knew this. George Michael watches the show all the time. He saw the thing and he's phoned in and he's pledged and it's gone through the bank. It's in the bank now, £50,000. I said, well, we've got to call him and thank him. So they got his number for us. We came home here to our house. And that evening at about 6 o'clock, I'm in the other room and Judy's with me and I'm a bit nervous, you know. We've met them all, but bloody hell, it's George Michael. So I dial his number. Yeah. He lives just around the corner in Highgate, about a mile away from here. So the phone rings, hello, and it's George Michael's voice. You know, come back on, I'm talking to George Michael on the phone. So I said, George, it's Richard Madeley. I know you didn't want any of us to know, and we're off. And we have this conversation, and I thank him for that. And we get chatting, and we have a lovely little 5 or 10 minutes chat, and Judy's like earwigging behind me. She wouldn't make the call. She's too shy. And then I just heard myself saying, I said, you live in Highgate, don't you, just around the corner? He said, yeah. I said, well, we're in Hampstead. I said, I think we should say thank you to more than just a phone call. Do you think you could come around for, say, Sunday lunch at some time? He said, I can come around this Sunday. And Judy is going, no, this is too much. No, this is too much. And I'm saying, yeah, we can do this Sunday. Okay, and I gave him the address. And 1 o'clock, he said, and can I bring Kenny? And Kenny was his lovely American boyfriend at the time. And I said, yeah, sure, bring Kenny. Right, 1 o'clock Sunday. And I put the phone down and I turned around and Judy was standing on her head. I've never seen my wife do a handstand before, but she was standing on her head with her against the sofa. Just, couldn't believe that George fucking Michael was coming to our house for lunch. So flash forward a few days, and I'm in the kitchen, because I do the cooking, I'm in the kitchen preparing whatever we're having, beef I think it was, for Sunday lunch. Well, it was duck, that's right, it's dressed up. And it's bang on 1 o'clock, the doorbell goes, and I go, you know, wipe my hands on my pinny, and go to the door and open it, and there is George, it's like a beetle standing on your doorstep. There's George Michael with his shades and his leathers, and he looked at his stubble, and he looked great because he was about to go on tour, so he was on a diet and he was looking after himself. This is before he fell into serious drug use, and his very very gorgeous boyfriend Kenny behind him, and they come in, and it was a little bit, you know, at first, but after a few minutes. We got on, and they were here for hours, weren't they?
7 hours.
7 hours. Mm. I remember George coming into the kitchen just before I served up, in his shades and his leathers. George Michael's in my kitchen, and he said, "Just want to say, Rich, no." He said, "I just want to say, no carbs, if you don't mind, no carbs." And I didn't know what that. I've never heard that before. I didn't know what he meant. I don't understand. What? He said, "No carbohydrates." He said, "I'm going on tour in a couple of weeks, and I'm still losing weight. So no potatoes, no parsley, none of that. I'll just have the meat and the gravy and the greens. It's fine." So I gave him a plate with no carbs, and you know what? In 1 minute, he picked up his fork and he was nicking roasters off everybody else's plate, nothing in his plate. But no, he was a lovely man,
and it
was
lovely.
And he was lovely. He used to refer to his singing voice. Without pomposity, as quote, my gift. And we knew what he meant, because it was a gift. I mean, his voice was extraordinary.
It was.
And talking about how he had to guard it and look after it and, you know, not smoke and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, we stayed friends for a few years, and then he just got lost in serious drug use. And he withdrew from everybody. You couldn't talk to him. You couldn't help him. You couldn't grab him by the elbow and drag him back. He just disappeared into drug abuse, and then of course died, and it was horrible. It was a real waste of a human being and of a musical genius and of a lovely man.
But he was a lovely man. Yeah.
Regardless of whatever his predilections may have been or his substance abuse, he remained the most generous and with the kindest of hearts.
Absolutely.
Can I just tell you both that I knew about George coming to your house for roast duck.
Did you?
Because he told me.
Did he?
And can I tell you how he told me?
Go on.
He went, I went to fucking Richard and Judy's house. He was just as starstruck as you. You loons.
That is so funny. No one's ever told us that before. How funny is that?
I was very shy around George because I was his biggest fan. He called in Rotten Loose Women and left me his number. I refused to take it because I thought if I've had a few drinks and I phone him up, I'll show myself up. So I did say to the producer, leave my number with George. And we became, you know, we would have these extraordinarily wonderful gossipy conversations on the phone where he'd ring up and just ask me the most random things about something he'd seen on telly. And there were, and then he did say, I've been to Richard and Judy's for Sunday lunch. And if I couldn't sort of enlighten him on a certain rumour or a piece of gossip, he might say, I'll give Richard a call.
Oh, bless him. Really, bless him. Bless him.
Do you know what? I feel very, very, very lucky to have known him. And not just because of his phenomenal talents, just because he was truly, we talk about handprints, he left one on me, for sure.
Absolutely. It's funny, I was on Desert Island Discs a few years ago, and I kicked myself afterwards, you know, because, you know, it's really hard to pick your records, you know, you're leaving stuff out that you'll remember later. And I really wish that I'd picked George live at Wembley at that Queen concert when he came on to sing Freddie Mercury Memorial. Absolutely. What a... In fact, as soon as we finish this, I'm gonna Google it and listen to it again.
Okay, can I add to that? Can I say, before you Google the actual performance, watch first the rehearsal footage that exists on YouTube. It's all there. You'll see he turns up to rehearse. He's got the shades on. He's definitely been off the carbs. But there's David Bowie in the corner watching, stood next to Seal. Right? They're all there rehearsing the day before the show. George comes in, picks up the mic. I get goosebumps even reciting this. And he nails it to the point that you've got David Bowie smoking a cigarette that literally stops smoking and is like, what? It is almost better than the actual performance. Please watch it and then message me and tell me if you get hairs on the back of your neck and a hand stand up. Yeah,
I've never seen that.
As always, I can talk to you forever, but I know you've got a box of books to dive into. Thank you both.
Yeah, we have. Thank you, Kate. It was lovely. We really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, darling. Thank you.
I'm not as much as me, let me tell you. Thank you. Ah, so there we are. That concludes our two-part chat with Richard and Judy, the legends, the purveyors of daytime television, the creators of its template. Thank you both so much for your time. As always, White Wine Question Time has been produced by me, Kate Thornton, alongside Ben Robbins and the Yahoo Studios team. Editing is by Eleanor Humphreys, and our music comes courtesy of Andy Bell. We'll be back next week with more great guests. But until then, thank you so much for loaning us your ears.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders that we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.